ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
Well, Australia will soon have a new Governor-General. Prominent businesswoman and gender equality advocate Samantha Mostyn will become Australia's 28th Governor-General. She'll be sworn in on the 1st of July and will be just the second woman ever to take on the role. The Prime Minister said she's deeply respected and a highly accomplished business leader.
Ms. Mostyn is a modern and optimistic leader for our modern and optimistic nation. Her leadership reflects our enduring Australian values of equality, fairness and a responsibility to build a better future for the next generation.
And the opposition leader, Peter Dutton's, concurred, acknowledging that he's wished Sam Mostyn well in taking on the role of Governor-General and her credentials.
Somebody who's been involved in business and sport for a long period of time and obviously is well known to many people within the government over a long period of time, and I wish her very best in her appointment.
The new appointee said she's deeply honoured to be appointed to the role and recognised, of course, that it's a great privilege to be named Australia's 28th Governor-General. Here is Sam Mostyn.
I can think of no greater purpose, Prime Minister, than to serve this country I love as Governor-General, particularly at a time in our history when the challenges and opportunities we face are large and complex.
Well, joining us tonight for Nightlife News Breakdown is Amy Remekas, Guardian Australia's political reporter. Amy, good evening. Welcome back again to Nightlife.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Sam Mostyn appears to be an impressive choice, well-credentialed. Tell us a bit about her background.
Sam Mostyn is probably really familiar to anyone who has had anything to do with gender equality or equity, but particularly over the last 10 years or so. She most recently headed up the government's Women's Economic Equality Task Force, which was coming up with ideas of how to actually bring women in line with men in terms of earning power, economic stability, equity amongst women as well, so not just looking at, you know, white women in office jobs, that sort of thing. But she's also had a very, very extensive career. She was the first woman AFL commissioner. She did that for about 11 years. That was pretty controversial at the time, I am told. It was a bit of a rocky start for her as well, trying to convince people that, hey, yeah, women can also lead the AFL. By the time she left it, of course, we had the beginnings of AFL Women's, which has gone on to be very successful, and they have the Mostyn Medal, which goes to the best and fairest within the AFLW. So she has left her mark there. She's had a very big career in corporate Australia. She's on the board for Mirvac, which is one of the biggest property developers, for Citibank, so one of the biggest banks. She is just exceptionally well known in a lot of the very powerful circles. And of course, she started in public service. She was an advisor to Paul Keating back in the 90s. So a very familiar person to a lot of people. But of course, it also means that some of her advocacy has upset some of the usual suspects. She was a big proponent for the Voice referendum, particularly within corporate Australia. And there's some people who are very upset that somebody who has referred to Australia Day previously as Invasion Day is now going to be the Governor General. And there's also just people upset the fact that, you know, that somebody who's advocated for women's equality and equity is going to be the next Governor General, because apparently they are not sort of the characteristics we would want of the person who gives the royal assent to our bills.
Yes, that's true. I mean, she's only the second woman after Quentin Bryce, who was Governor-General from 2008 to 2014. But as you say, she has an activist background. I mean, it's an interesting office, isn't it? And, you know, people take different views as to what they want from the office. Some see anonymity and blandness, in a sense, as an attractiveness for the office. Others say that's not the case. The current occupant, David Hurley, for example, I think many people would be probably struggle to say to nominate him off the top as to who the Governor General was or could say anything about him. That won't be the case with Sam Mostyn, will it?
Well, maybe or maybe not. I mean, like, a lot of Sam Mostyn's advocacy has been done by elevating other voices in the room. She may have brought them to the room, but she allows people to speak for themselves. And she has been very big in her career, from everyone that I've spoken to today, on inclusion and making sure that you bring voices from all different parts of Australia to the table so that they can tell their stories. It's been one of the hallmarks of how Sam Mostyn has handled herself throughout her entire career. And I mean, sure, we've had a lot of military people who have been the Governor General, and there is this idea that, you know, if you are an actual general, then you should get a go as Governor General. But then there's competing view that just because you've been great in the military doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to adjust to being great at community, which is what being Governor General is all about. I mean, there is a separate argument about whether we should even have a Governor General and whether it's, you know, it's a bit of a system that belongs to the past and whether Australia really should consider becoming a republic. That's a separate argument. But I think this idea that some of the critics we've been having, I mean, the Australian dedicated a hell of a lot of text today to how Sam Mostyn is, you know, the wokest Governor General that we're going to have. I would say that there is a very big part of society who think the fact that the Australian columnist writers are so upset is a very good indication of just how well Sam Mostyn will actually do in the role and how many people will actually support her. I mean, Pauline Hanson was going on in Sky about how, yeah, this is a woke appointment and perhaps we should have a ballot where a whole bunch of people get to put their name forward for Governor General and we all vote on it, which pretty much sounds like a republic to me. I'm pretty sure that was one of the models put forward for choosing a president for Australia. That's true. So, yeah.
That is true. Mind you, we have had, I mean, I don't know what Ms. Mostyn's views are on the republic. I imagine, given her view, she probably is a Republican. But then again, we've had Republican governors general before. Bill Hayden was a Republican and he was Governor General. So it's not a requirement.
No, and aren't we grown up enough to have people of different views represent us? I mean, do we need to really have this 1950s view of Australia and that is the only sort of person who can uphold the Governor General's office? It's kind of ridiculous. Mm. Australia moves on. Australia is a different society to the one that it was even 5 years ago before the pandemic. And it's okay to choose different people for this role. And hey, it's a 5-year term. If it's terrible, there'll be another Governor General that everyone can forget the name of.
All right, look, on to an infinitely more serious matter, the aftermath of the killing of those aid workers in Gaza. The government's anger and concern at the death of the Australian aid worker, Zomi Frankem, in Gaza has continued. The Israelis have admitted that Ms. Frankem was killed along with six other aid workers from the World Central Kitchen when they were struck by an Israeli airstrike in Gaza, despite the fact that at least some of the vehicles were clearly marked as aid vehicles. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu seemed to kind of shrug it off, saying sort of along the lines of, well, in war these things happen.
Unfortunately, in the past day there was a tragic event in which our forces unintentionally harmed non-combatants in the Gaza Strip. This happens in war. We are conducting a thorough inquiry and we are in contact with the governments. We will do everything to prevent a recurrence.
I'm not sure this is going down all that well. The Prime Minister spoke to his Israeli counterpart overnight, seeking an explanation, emphasising, as he put it, the importance of full accountability and transparency. And Foreign Minister Penny Wong's gone in harder. She had this response to the Israeli Prime Minister's comments.
I would say to Mr. Netanyahu that wartime does not obviate responsibility for observing international humanitarian law, including the protection of aid workers.
Yeah, she went on. She had more to say.
International humanitarian law applies to Israel, and that law protects among civilians, and that law protects aid workers. I don't think this can be dismissed in any way.
Yes, the fog of war argument doesn't seem to be getting much traction, and perhaps neither should it. Amy, there seems to be a real fury about this. The Israelis don't seem to be too moved. they're putting themselves further away from the centre of opinion on this, aren't they?
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, let's also be very frank. This has come after the death of more than 30,000 civilians, not counting those who are still trapped below the rubble of what is left of Gaza, of which there is not much. There has been the destruction of hospitals. There has been the targeting and murder of journalists, of doctors, of humanitarian aid workers before this. This incident is not isolated in Israel's assault on Gaza and the Palestinian people. And while there have been some stronger words from our government in response to the death of an Australian who, by all accounts, is a hero, but while there have been the stronger words about Zomi's death, there has not been any red lines drawn by this government.
No.
There has not been any discussion about what the potential consequences are for what Israel has done. There hasn't been any discussion of what Australia is going to do in response. We have reiterated our anger and disappointment, and we have had the consistent, to use the message of Anthony Albanese and Penny Wong, the consistent message to uphold international law, but we have not had any answer as to, well, when that doesn't happen, what does Australia do? Apparently, we do nothing.
All right, look, on to other issues. The crossbench are wanting greater transparency regarding political donations after $16 million in so-called dark money has been shown to have been directed into Voice campaigning. It's only now, as usual, way after the event and way too late that we find out who donated what to who during the campaign. Transparency advocates say the source of 20% of funds during the referendum campaign won't be disclosed due to Australia's political donations laws. And crossbenchers have urged the government to strengthen the laws after the source of millions of dollars in dark money poured into the Indigenous Voice referendum campaign and was hidden. This has been a theme, hasn't it? The independents are keen to improve transparency here. What's gone on with this? Why don't we know where all the money's gone?
Well, we don't know where all the money's gone for the same reason why we never actually see any changes to donation laws that would tell us where the money has come from. And that is because neither major party has an appetite to bring sunlight to this issue because it helps fund what they do during election campaigns. And so while you have the crossbench who have been making quite admirable moves, and not just this crossbench, this has been something that Greens and independent MPs across the last couple of decades have really tried to bring attention to and bring changes to, and not just at the federal level, at state levels as well, where there's been a little bit more success, particularly in states such as Queensland, where you've seen banning of developer donations, gambling donations, and also real-time reporting of donations. Despite all of that push, there's never actually been a government and an opposition at the same time who have gone, yeah, you know what, there's something in this and we should probably have a look at it, because they benefit from it. And it's only going to become something that the major parties become concerned about when it starts getting a little bit out of control, when perhaps one side is benefiting more from all of this anonymous money or dark money pouring in than the other side. Or, as we've seen recently, if independents start benefiting from donors and they're not quite sure where this money is coming from and who are funding these independent campaigns or these PACs that are funding these independent campaigns, then you will probably see some more action. But until the politicians are actually worried about what this money is doing to their own electoral chances, we're going to see diddly squat on this issue.
Yeah, sadly, I've been a long observer of this, I am disappointed to say that you're quite right. You're quite right. Nothing will happen, because then anything that interferes with party political donations will never get through Parliament. Amy, you've been observing Parliament the last couple of weeks up to Easter. You've written a piece called Albanese's Attempts to Appease Dutton and Labor in a Political Quagmire of Its Own Making. You say that Mr. Albanese has not been shy about making it known he wants to run a middle-of-the-road government, but how does that work, dealing with the opposition, as we know, who have made an art form of opposition?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, what Catherine Murphy used to refer to as the Tony Abbott tribute band, which is what we're seeing within the coalition. But what we've had Labor respond is by trying to, you know, out-Dutton Dutton, particularly on areas like border security. And what that has meant is that you have Labor compromising what its own platform is and what it purports to stand for in order to appease one strong man in the parliament. And that hasn't gone down overly well for them. It's not going down well with Labor's voters. It's not going to go down well with the people who they're hoping will vote for them. And it's not doing anything to appease the coalition, because you can't appease the coalition on this stuff. They want to be in government. They're not going to turn around and go, oh, actually, no, you guys are doing a fabulous job. That's exactly what we're going to do. Carry on. Pip, pip, you're doing wonderfully. That is never going to happen. No matter how much Labor compromises and tries to bring the coalition on board, it is not going to stop the political attacks. And that is what the government has been trying to do, particularly since the Voice campaign, so the beginning of the year when they tried to do the revamp of we're getting over what happened in the last year with the Voice campaign. It's what they've been doing on border security. It's what they're doing on a lot of social justice issues like religious discrimination. And I think we can see it's not actually going to work. And Margaret Thatcher used to say that one of her greatest achievements was actually Tony Blair and New Labour. And I think Anthony Albanese's government is coming to the dangerous tipping point where it may be the greatest achievement of John Howard and Tony Abbott, because I think people want their politicians and their political parties to stand for something, and middle of the road doesn't work when we're not in middle of the road times. And I think that is going to become very, very clear very, very soon, particularly with voters under the age of 45.
Yes, interesting, interesting. Amy, it's always great to talk. I appreciate your time and thank you.
Yeah, it was a very cheery talk today, wasn't it?
Thanks, Amy. We'll look forward to talking again. See ya.
Yeah.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.